see the fun. I see the fun. The Diary of Jack Kirkman Podcast.
Oh my God, what is this? Why is Jen making contact on a Friday night? Oh, this is a grand experiment, just like America is, and it could fail, just like America did. But this is my new extra content for you guys. I hate the word content. Why'd I just give in to the man? I'm hoping every Friday night to release a special bonus half hour of I Seem Fun called This Week Seemed Fun, where I talk about the things in pop culture and politics that I thought were fun, literally and snarkily. And then you get your regular Jen's Personal Life for an hour every Tuesday, which of course won't always just be about my life, because sometimes I have no life. But I was thinking a lot of times I'll record a podcast and then all this stuff happens that week and I'm like, fuck, I want to say something about it. And I'm not on the road and so I'm talking to you. So I'm just going to go, I just have some vague notes with some clips. I mean, I'm just going to wing this. This is not El Preparado. But one of the things that's going on this week is that there is speculation that if Hillary Clinton becomes president, that she's going to make Joe Biden her Secretary of State, or he's high on the list. I don't care what your politics are. You know, I always say, turn this off if you love this and love that. Everyone has to listen to this, no matter what. I fucking love Joe Biden. I think he's a motherfucking player. I haven't polled any Republicans. I actually don't even know anyone that wants to talk about Joe Biden. And that's all I want to do is talk to people about Joe Biden. I'm actually surprised. Again, I haven't asked any, but if any Republicans don't like him, I'm so surprised because he's got that bootstrap, pick it up by them, like working class thing. He's taken the Amtrak to work his whole life. You know, everyone in his family's died. He's seen hardship. And I was just thinking what a great Secretary of State he would make. I lost my love for John Kerry and I was, I don't know why. And you know what? I haven't even paid attention. I'm just basing it on his face. That's not fair. That's not fair. I just am not in the mood for his face anymore. Is that how we do politics now? His face bothers me. He just organized a peace treaty with Israel and Palestine. Yeah, I can't put him in the history books. Again, his face. Can he wear a mask? So here's me. I just remember this speech that I thought was, you know, it stayed in my memory for 8 years. Joe Biden's 2008 Democratic National Convention speech. Of course, I'm not going to play the whole thing for you. I'm going to play this 1 minute clip. His mom's in the audience and he talks about her basically like building up his confidence to where it gets to this point where she's like, kick people's asses. And this is what I want to play. This is what I play. I remember years ago, I told you guys about The Town. I would play that when I was depressed. I forgot about this. This is a great, if you're depressed, clip. Make this your ringtone. This will pump you up. I've watched it twice already, and I'm like, oh, I got to record the podcast. And I'm a bit PMS. I'm tears running down my face like, that's right, Joe Biden and his mom. I forget her name. Okay, hang on. So this is him talking about her teaching him about having, I don't know what the fucking word is, but just teaching him about failure and about having honor.
Failure. Failure at some point in your life is inevitable. But giving up is unforgivable. As a child, I stuttered. And she lovingly would look at me and tell me, Joey, it's because you're so bright you can't get the thoughts out quickly enough.
Aww.
When I was not as well dressed as the other kids, she'd look at me and say, Joey, oh, you're so handsome, honey. You're so handsome. And when I got knocked down by guys bigger than me, and this is the God's truth, she sent me back out and said, bloody their nose so you can walk down the street the next day.
Yeah! Yes, Mrs. Biden. Kick their fucking ass. Physically. Not with words. I'm not going to be all book smart. You tell, I'll tell those guys technically violence isn't the answer. Yes, it is. Punch them in the face. Bloody their lip. You Irish Catholic motherfuckers. I love that speech. That's who you want as Secretary of State. He's got that peacenik heart, but you bloody their lip. Why did Joe Biden just go to France and punch everyone? Joe, that's not where there are allies. Okay, I got carried away. Some guys were bigger than me on the channel. And I'm sorry, I had a flashback to what my mother said. What am I doing here? You're just having tea with the high priestess. No, there's not a high priestess in France. I just forgot what they called. They call it a president. They call it a president. And I forgot. All right? Like you know anything. Anyway, I think it's great. But the internet is already with the. Joe Biden and Hillary are going to start wars together. They're fucking 70 years old. You think they're going to start anything? They start a book club together, if anything. They're going to start wars together. And he's going to draft all your daughters. Oh, suddenly we care about women. First of all, if anyone's drafted, I would be shocked. We're never going to bring back the draft. Eh, maybe we will. I was in support of bringing back the draft years ago. You know, it's one of those things where it's like I'm sitting high atop my liberal tower with my ideals. And then sometimes you realize you're just acting like Maude. And if you've never seen Maude, that's what the whole show was about. This like uber liberal woman played by Bea Arthur who had the best intentions, but was tone deaf to things because of her. You know, they didn't say white privilege back then. But it was that kind of thing. And so oftentimes she would have to learn a lesson about the way she looked at things. So I remember years ago during Bush, I was like, let's bring back the draft because it seemed like we're sending poor people to war. I mean, that's kind of how this country works, right? If you don't have a lot of money, you can get your health insurance and your college taken care of by working these really low paying jobs, like at a Walmart or at a Starbucks. And like, technically you're getting health insurance and perhaps free college or something towards college, but you're like not making a living wage and you have to work so much and then go to school. And then how do you get out of that? And the people above you are making billions and it's just grossly unfair. And then there's things like joining the military where you can get things paid for and eventually you can get a pension, but it's like you might die in a war that's unnecessary for oil. So it seems as though the people who sign up for this are America's poor and working class. Do you see the rich senators' kids? It ain't me, you know, signing up for war and actually getting to the front line. So I was like, bring back the draft so it's equal. So everybody shitting they pants out there. But then it's like, then I've talked to people who serve and my little treatise about, you know, oh, you should have more options as the working poor in this country. They're like, what? I just wanted to join. Like, I love my country and I wanted to serve and it's a great fucking job and I love everyone I work with and go fuck yourself. I'm not mad at the commander in chief. And you're like, oh, sorry. You know, so it's, I don't know what the right thing to do is. So I support whatever is the right thing to do besides not having war. Whatever the thing is that makes us a stronger country. The draft seems evil though, doesn't it? Like it's just, you have to betray your country when called if you don't believe in going or if you're scared. And then if you're scared, it's like you're rung up as some pussy. I'm terrified. I would dodge the draft. And then I would act like, oh, it's just against my principles, even though I'm not out protesting war every day. It is against my principles. I would really lose my mind if I had to machine gun someone down, even an enemy. But it's not, you know, it's not all simple, good smelling roses over here. The not draft situation of who actually ends up fighting our wars for us. It's grossly unfair. So anyway, but I don't know. But I think Joe Biden would be a fantastic candidate for Secretary of State. I believe besides the story about punching people, he is a great negotiator. And I think he's a good example of America. Like, he is truly, I don't know. I don't want to hear anything bad about Joe Biden. He better not be grabbing any pussies out there. He better be. Oh, someone tried to send me a picture once. You know that picture of him campaigning for Obama 4 years ago, or maybe it was even 8 years ago. There's a biker woman sitting on his lap. They're like, what about this? What about this? Some outraged person sent it to me. I can't tell the difference between the left and the right anymore, by the way. I cannot tell the difference. They act the same. Bullies online. It literally made me register Democrat. I'd gone back and forth over the years, and I'm like, no. Handing in my liberal card. I mean, I'm a liberal at heart. I'm a socialist at heart. But I just don't think this country could fucking handle it. So I have to look at what's reasonably in front of me, and I think this country can only handle the Democratic Party. I think it's the best party out of the two. But we won't get into that. But you notice I said out of the two. I didn't say in my ideal world. So what the fuck was I saying? Oh, they sent me a picture of the biker woman sitting on him. It's like, look it. He went to a biker place. That is the context of this. She's a badass bitch who's probably crushing him. She could kill him in 3 seconds with her thumb and forefinger. Forefinger? The joke is she's sitting on him. He didn't go in there like, hey, honey, sit on my lap and grabbed her. It's an awkward photo because it's an old white guy with a biker chick on his lap. That's the point. That's the point. You think she knew what she was doing? You didn't catch a moment of Joe Biden creeping out a biker woman. Do we not know how to look at anything with context anymore? Do we not? Is everything a screen grab of two people talking closely on set and then you can caption it any way you want? Look at these two lovebirds getting close on set. No, they have to whisper because they're mic'd and they're talking shit about the fucking director. And then you got a paparazzi photo of them. They're in their costumes. They're not actually kissing. Okay. Anyway, I'm all for him being Secretary of State. And then when he bombs somewhere because he's lost his mind, then you can fucking tell me. So then we're going to talk about... So Jill Stein. Oh, boy. Little Jilly. So this is about hypocrisy. And this is another context that I don't think people understand. Jill Stein was I don't even know if she was investigating. Hang on one sec. Jill Stein investments. Now look, I have a investment portfolio. Do you think I know what's in there? No. I used to be such a good person, by the way. I was thinking about this the other day. I used to have my money in a credit union, the AfterSag credit union. And then I had to get a business manager. And then they're like, no, we have to be at a real bank. And I was like, okay. And I just did that. But I was like, I'm not putting my money in the banking system. Credit unions only. And I was tweeting about it years ago. And it's a wonderful life clips that were supporting my thing. And I'm right. But now I'm back in the banks. Then I was like, I'm not putting my money in the thing. And then it's like, well, you have to keep your 401k. I mean, you have to. That's how we do things. That's how we make interest for our retirement because banks don't give interest anymore. Okay. Don't invest in anything bad. Okay. And if you do, just put like $5 in it and then write an apology note. You know, I know that I am not in control of all my investments. I know that even as a part-time vegan, I'm giving, you know, like I should go fully balls out. Like I eat at restaurants that serve meat. I eat at restaurants that take part in the meat industry. I eat at restaurants that take part in the dairy industry. So I'm giving them my money, even though I'm not literally buying the meat. I'm giving that place money to keep running, to keep buying more meat for the other customers. So why don't I stop frequenting those? I like them. So it's sort of like at a certain point, I have made a decision. I'm not going balls out with my ideals. I'm doing enough that I feel like I'm doing something for myself. I'm doing something because I believe it's the right thing to do. But I'm not going further with it. And that's, there's not one person on this earth who doesn't compromise their ideals in some way. We make jokes about how we use iPhones made by children in China. I mean, if we really understood the realities of it and didn't just think, well, there's nothing we can do. If we all stopped using them, they would have to regroup, right? The company would have to regroup. So we all do this. And that's sort of my point about Jill Stein. I'm not attacking her because she invests in these deplorable things. We all do in some way or another, whether literally or just by not doing things or by buying a product that's linked with this company, that this and that. We are kind of fucked. We're kind of at the hand of horrible corporations and sweatshops worldwide. We really are. So we can make small changes in our everyday. You know, you can shop local instead of Target at Christmas. I mean, there's little things we can do that seem stupid, but they sort of keep normalcy and real America and down-home values running at the same time as this corporate greed craziness. And I feel like, honestly, if we're just being realistic with the time we have left on this planet, that is the best I think we can do, is keep everything else alive while that stuff is alive too. Like, temper the beast. Is that an expression? I just made it up. You know, but I don't know if we can kill it. But keep it from getting too big, but I don't think we can kill it. So the idealism of the first-time voters is lovely. But I don't think they have the intellectual understanding and the emotional maturity yet to know that we know this. We have idealism, right? My friends out there listening, whether you're right, left, center, anarchist, you've got your ideals. And then you've kind of got the way you live because you don't truly have a ton of choices, but you have your ideals. And in your own family unit, in the way you maybe run your small business, in the way you do things for you, even around the house, maybe you can live up to your ideals there. But you can't actually get the world to bend or America to bend to your ideals. And that's not what having ideals is about. You're not a sellout, hypocrite, failure if you cannot achieve your ideals. And so why I am about to take down Jill Stein, take her down. She'll be gone after this podcast, everybody. Why I'm about to read an article about Jill Stein. You see how language and is because it's the way that she's allowed. Like, I keep a close eye on my fan base. I see you guys. If I see like fans of Jen Kirkman acting a certain way, I'll say something. You might not stop, but I'll acknowledge it. Like, everyone that opens for me on the road is like, your fans are so nice. Like, they let me be as gay as I want to be, as female as I want to be, as black as I want to be. They're not bad people. They hear all points of view. They laugh. They're encouraging. They come up after. They're sweet people. They're kind. I don't know anyone's political leanings in my crowd. I don't know anyone's orientations. I mean, except some people make it obvious. But in general, there's this beautiful thing I feel between me and my specific crowd is that for this one night, we're all going to laugh together and we're all going to respect each other. If I felt that the crowd was turning and I was getting feedback just based on what I felt from the audience and my opening acts and just what I saw on Twitter, if I saw that people were like, yeah, Jen, I love you, but fuck those Muslims, I would say, oh, wait a minute, something's happened here. Where, did I give off the impression that I support this? Because I don't. So please don't. Here's what I think. And if I can influence you guys to think that, because I think it's right, then great. But I need to make this clear. Y'all got me wrong. And Jill doesn't do that. She retweets people that are like, the oligarchy is taking us down. Hillary goes to prison. You know, she's starting a wave of paranoia. And she's doing this thing where she's playing into young people's idealism with literally no sense of reality. She cannot win. We don't have a third party. We have independence. It's like the closest thing, and she's not even that. And there's this sense that she is pure. There's this obsession with purity. It happened with people who got too into Bernie. Nobody is pure. Everybody is in politics. Everybody is in the world, but it's people who genuinely want to make things better out of a, I don't know what, whether it's selflessness or narcissism, it doesn't matter, right? You get the result, sometimes a good result both ways. So there's this purity. And so when you find out someone like her doesn't have the purity, someone like me goes, yeah, no shit. But you hope the younger people, I'm not saying turn your back on her, but I'm saying understand that we're all nuanced. But the problem I have with her is she won't fucking admit it. And that's, to me, more dangerous than someone who's like got a few sides to them that they're not hiding. So this is what we find out about Jill. Jill Stein's ideology, this is from thedailybeast.com, which I hate. Jill Stein's ideology says one thing, her investment portfolio says another. She rails against big carbon, big banks, big pharma, while she holds substantial investments in them. She's largely based her campaign on her uncompromising positions on the environment, opposition to big banks and Wall Street, defense contractors, and the pharmaceutical industry. But an analysis of her financial disclosures, which she was required to file as a presidential candidate, shows she is heavily invested in the very industries that she maligns the most. And as a result of her investments, she has built significant wealth. According to the disclosure form she filled with the U.S. Office of blah, 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 she and her husband, Richard, have investments, with the exception of real estate, valued at anywhere from $3,832,000 to $8,505,000. I didn't know she was that rich, y'all. Stein told the Daily Beast she inherited over $500,000 from her parents. Trust fund, baby. That's who has time for all this bullshit, isn't it? We don't know their exact net worth because filers are only required to provide a range of the value of their investments as opposed to exact values. Stein has also voluntarily released the first two pages of her 2015 federal tax return. That return, filed jointly with her husband, shows a total income of $349,000 in 2015 and an effective tax rate of 21%. Okay, that's not like outrageous. I mean, she's not like, I mean, that's all money, but she's not fucking a billionaire. She does not rely on accountants or lawyers to prepare her tax returns. She said she uses the popular do-it-yourself software TurboTax. An examination provides no outside party was involved. She's made purity a central pillar of her presidential candidacy, and she has held that the Green Party reigns above all others with respect to moral and ethical supremacy. In an interview, she said, I have long since thrown in the towel on the Democratic and Republican parties because they are really a front group for the 1%, for predatory banks, fossil fuel giants, and war profiteers. Most of her investments are in mutual funds or index funds. Experts suggest these funds, which are highly diversified, provide more consistent returns than picking individual stocks. That's the problem that we all face, right? It's important to note that politicians from all parties have been held accountable for their mutual and index fund investments. Her controversial investments include Big Carbon. She invested $995,000 to $2 million in funds such as the Vanguard 500 that maintain stakes in Exxon, Chevron, Duke Energy, ConocoPhillips, and Toho Gas, a Japanese company that engages in the sale of natural gas, tar, and coke, a fuel made from coal. Financial industry, she's denounced big banks, but roughly invested $1 to $2.5 million in funds like the TIAA-CREF Equity Index. Holdings in these funds include big banks like J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and the Deutsche Bank. One of the funds maintains a significant position in Goldman Sachs bonds. She once referred to Goldman Sachs as Hillary Clinton's best friend. Big Pharma. She's a stalwart opponent of what she sees as the corrupt influence of the pharmaceutical industry. She's listed between $50,000 and $100,000 in Merck. She also invested $1,130,000. To $200 million in Pfizer, Novartis, Johnson & Johnson, and Allergan. Big Tobacco, $500,000 to $1 million in Philip Morris. Defense contracts and drones, invested $500,000 to $100,000 in a fund that has Raytheon Corp. I think we all fucking do on that one. While it's true that Stein would not have control over the investments of the funds she invested in, she did have a choice over to whether to invest in these funds to begin with. In the past, political candidates, in an effort to avoid a conflict of interest or have their judgment called into question, have invested their entire portfolios in U.S. Treasuries, cash equivalents, in socially responsible index funds or clean energy funds. In her statement, Stein said that she has explored more socially responsible funds, but found their investments in fracking and large-scale biofuels not much better than the non-green funds. I have not yet found the mutual funds that represent represent my goals of advancing the cause of people, planet, and peace. That's actually not true. I have some investments in green stuff. My ex-husband and I used to invest only in that. I think we lost everything, but listen, you can do it. I think we really did lose everything. Okay, that's it. She said, I will have trouble sleeping at night if Donald Trump is elected. I'll also have trouble sleeping at night if Hillary Clinton is elected. Girl, you got insomnia. Okay, that's my brilliant analysis. So what else happened this week? Not politics. Vine ended. And I've never used Vine. And I'm one of those old ladies that's like, I don't want to use another one of these apps. What am I going to make a 10-second video for? And then I've seen friends have amazing careers with Vine and they do funny things. And I'm like, oh, I guess I just couldn't think of anything to do. But, you know, I try to use Snapchat and then I forget. I'm like, I don't know how to do this. And then Instagram stories. And I just found out yesterday, like, how to actually use it. Like, I didn't even know. And, so I was reading about Vine, and when it closed, I was like going to make a snarky joke, like, who cares? Well, it was going to be funnier than that. And then I was reading that somebody tweeted, like, black people, like, ruled Vine, and of course they took it away from us. And I'm like, oh, there's another component here? And so one of the things I was reading about that was where was it? On Thursday, several people who pointed out that Vine gave protesters in Ferguson, Missouri, a way to broadcast what was happening in the months following the shooting death of Michael Brown, an unarmed 18-year-old black teenager, by a white police officer. The footage captured moments of heightened tension between protesters and the police. I'll always love Vine because that's all we really had in protest in the fall 2014, Mr. McKesson tweeted. There was no Twitter video and no Periscope back then. Tracy Clayton, who hosts the Another Round podcast at BuzzFeed, wrote in a series of tweets that Vine had given young minority performers a platform to express themselves and a way to grow a following outside the confines of conventional media. People love black culture, but they don't like to pay black people for it. High appropriation. Vine wasn't perfect, but it was a way to try to get around it, Ms. Clayton wrote on Twitter. See, I didn't know that because I'm Whitey McWhiterson over here. So before you make a snarky joke about something that doesn't matter to you, maybe take a look and see where it matters to other people. And so, rest in peace, Vine. And then, of course, people were posting their favorite Vines. And I was like, oh, fuck, that is pretty fucking funny. I'm not talking about those. Blacks sure are funny. I'm talking about other videos I saw of, there was one that was just an owl running across the floor and then it turned its head. And I was like, I will watch the shit out of that. But now I can't. I mean, I can watch that, but I can't watch any more inspired by or like it. And lastly, I wanted to talk about Finding Prince Charming, one of my favorite shows that I think I am the only one watching. Big week. The last four contestants met Robert's family, and I found it very weird because he was like, my sister is the most important person in the world to me. And she's like this, you know, like Rosie Perez ripoff. And she was like, just saying really weird, like there's such undercurrents of homophobia in this show where every time he sat down with someone who was like, obviously they were getting a little handsy with each other, or they'd be like, yeah, we shared a kiss. She'd be like, TMI, just kidding. But you're like, no, you're homophobic. Like you might support your brother and you might love him because you have this weird narcissistic obsession with family and like talking about how family's important and family's important. And you know that it's wrong to be blatantly homophobic and shun your brother, but that doesn't mean you're ready to hear about him kissing another guy. And I know nobody wants to think about their siblings kissing anybody. But if, you know, you were sitting with your sister and her husband gave her a peck on the cheek, you wouldn't be like, okay, don't go there. I mean, you wouldn't. And she was doing stuff like that. And she seemed to not like the more effeminate men that he was with. And she liked this one guy who like posed no threat and was super young and who Robert really hadn't had a lot of personal time with yet. And so they didn't have a story about them kissing. It was just like hanging out with this guy. And so it was very interesting to watch. And I know that my eyes seem funner out there in Los Angeles who hates the show. I wonder what you would think of that. You can feel free to email me at iseemfun@gmail.com. And so I know that this show has failed the gay community in many ways. People feel like it's not even an accurate representation. And if people are hooking up in the house, you know, why don't we even talk about it? And one of my favorite characters is, hang on one second, was Robbie from Finding Prince Charming. So he did an interview with Vulture.com, and it's called Robbie Tells All. And he said, he said two of the suitors did hook up with each other, although it never made the air because we didn't know about it until after we were eliminated. Sam and Chad hooked up on the first night, so that's what happened on night number one. And then night number two, Chad had his hands in his pants and he was making the move on Eric. So there was definitely some canoodling. But for the most part, everyone was very ladylike. And I think it was a house full of bottoms, too. The deprivation is what kept us lusting after Robert. No cell phones, couldn't go on an app or anything like that. You had no source of entertainment other than one another, and you became annoyed with each other. So when Robert came in the house, it was flies on shit. I mean, that's kind of what they do to every fucking reality show. But there's just something about this guy, Robert. I feel like, I don't know. I just feel like he's judgmental. And he's, instead of like, I want to get to know you, he'll be like, you don't seem like you can open up very much. It's a defensive posturing. So I don't know. I've read, he follows me on Twitter. I don't want to ruin our relationship. I've read that he has found love, but he hasn't said who it is because he'll ruin the show. But I don't know. I don't know if I believe it. I'm going to keep watching. My prediction is that he ends up, with Chad. That's my prediction. And you're like, I don't watch the show, so I don't fucking know who Chad is. Just remember, when the winner of this show is announced and it's on all the channels and people are standing outside of television stores watching, and they'll go, Chad's the winner. You'll go, Jen Kirkman said that. And then when the newspapers spin around, breaking news, here he, and it's on the front of the New York Times, you'll know that I predicted it. Oh my God, I'm well over 30 minutes. This is not going to happen. This is a half-hour podcast. So that's what we talked about this week. Hey, I covered everything I felt like talking about. Those are the five things that were important, four things that were important to me this week. I don't care about anything else. So until next week, how should I sign off on this one? Until the regular podcast, have fun. That's bad. We'll come up with something. Have fun.